This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the November 30th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to wrap up the open season shows with co-host Dr. Ray Kirk. Ray is a retired Fed from OPM. We are fortunate enough to work together at NITP doing retirement seminars. Ray is co-host of the show most weeks. And good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
Everything's good. And now better that I always get nervous at the beginning for whatever reason. So and one other thing, just not necessarily directly what we're going to say, but we have to do a shout out to Walt Francis, Walton Francis. And Walt has been writing the book Checkbook Guides to Federal Healthcare Plans. And he's only been doing it for 23 years. And prior to that, has a very impressive resume. But one of the things that he did is at Harvard Kennedy School. So just a terrific guest like Ray. And if you want to go back, I think it was a couple weeks ago, he was on with Tammy Flanagan, and they walked through how to look at federal healthcare plans online. Anyway, let's put the spotlight on Ray. And again, Ray is a retired Fed, long service, and fortunate enough, we work together at NITP doing retirement seminars. So, open season. What are the takeaways somebody should think about taking away, or what are some of the takeaways that maybe people don't think about that we touched on?
Okay. Well, the first, of course, is to remember that open season lasts one more week, that next Monday, December 14th, is the last day of open season. So you have until midnight, although I suggest you don't wait until that last minute to make your decision. But you've had 5 weeks to, well, 4 weeks up to now, it'll be 5 weeks for open season to think about what you're going to do. And so it's time to take some action. Keeping in mind that OPM has made very clear they're not setting up any special provisions because of the quarantines and the lockdowns and the fact that agencies, people are all working at home. The deadlines are still going to be the deadlines. So people want to pay, you know, don't let it slip by.
Right. And talking with folks and doing the seminars as well, what do you find that we have this 1 week to go, that people don't know that there's 1 week to go, or more importantly, they don't know the power of being able to analyze and make the best decision for them and or their families?
Well, you're absolutely right that most people, and again, we had a couple guests made the point, including having Jay Fritz, who works in the insurance program area at the Office of Personnel Management, one of the senior managers there, that over the years, it's only about 5% of federal employees and annuitants actually make changes during open season. And I would suspect it's a pretty, not a very much bigger percentage. In addition to that, they actually pay attention to it. I know my experience while I was a federal employee and to some extent now as a retiree, where I have this opportunity every open season, that you kind of, you know, sitting down and doing a detailed analysis is not, people don't really do that. You know, to kind of paraphrase what's now sometimes an infamous statement, you know, if you don't like your plan, you can change your plan. One of the great flexibilities that federal employees and again retirees who continue eligible to continue the health insurance into retirement, one of the great options that we have is that every open season, we get to review all of the options in the healthcare plans that are offered to us and make choices. And the way I like to describe it when I'm doing the seminars and the webinars for NITP is it's like the movie Groundhog Day. January 1st, the beginning, the beginning of the plan year, is the world starts all over again for in terms of health coverage. That it doesn't matter what plan you were in the year before, doesn't matter what your health experience had been the year before, doesn't matter what pre-existing conditions you had, that the beginning of the plan year, everybody starts all over again. So it's a great opportunity, because if you were unhappy with your plan, then you get to change your plan. If you're happy with your plan, then you can get to continue on.
I remember a show not long ago where an individual called, and it was midway through the year, I guess, and they had an issue that came up, but they could switch plans to a plan that was more accommodating with regards to reimbursement and the like, and maybe they were out of pocket some dollars for that 6 months, but that was it. And that's just a lot of horsepower. I suppose people could do it within a month of the closeout, or a month after it began. They just didn't know that there was that flexibility.
Well, it's flexibility under special circumstances. Not everybody. You just, February 1st, you say, I want a redo. But there are, if you have a qualifying life event, and the list of qualifying life events, which is published as part of the form, the health insurance form. It's a very small print on the back of one of those pages, and it's the entire page. So a lot of things that go on in your life do open the door for making changes to your health insurance plan. But when you make a decision during open season, you're making a decision for the year, unless your life changes, you have one of these qualifying life events.
So somebody that let's say switched from X plan to Y plan, and the Y plan was more pricey, but it offered an opportunity for the individual policyholder to enjoy that benefit. But after a while, maybe they weren't subject to that malady that they had, or it was cured. They can switch back off maybe the higher cost plan and go into a great plan, but wouldn't cover necessarily the issue that the person had before. So, I mean, I get the impression, talking to the different people that come in, a lot of the federal employees, it's kind of set it and forget it. Am I right with that?
Well, certainly set it and forget it. That I don't know if OPM has ever done a specific study, but the kind of my ad hoc intuitive analysis would be that certainly the plurality, perhaps a majority of federal employees, probably have the same plan they had a decade ago. That the people, they get a plan, unless they've had some really major issue with the plan, they just continue on year after year. And sometimes even when they've had a major issue, that my wife has a friend whose husband is a federal employee. And my wife's friend has had some orthopedic issues, and therefore has needed a lot of physical therapy services. And the health insurance plan that they have, that her husband has, and she's a family member, doesn't have the greatest physical therapy benefits. And so during the year, she'll complain that she ran out of visits, and now she's has to pay it all out of pocket. And then it comes open season. They don't change plans, and the next year goes through the same cycle again. That's an example of somebody, they're kind of rooted in that health insurance plan, and they don't do any analysis during open season. They probably look and see what the premium change has been, but they don't actually look at the details of the benefits that you get for that premium. And that's the step that people should take. And that's where Walt Francis's book, over the years, he's been a tremendous impact, I think, and certainly created a really valuable tool that allows people to do that, because he does a lot of the homework for you. He lays out how the plans vary and some of the factors to be looking for. There are other tools available. OPM has an online tool that kind of will set up a plan-by-plan comparison. The analogy I think of is that if you're buying a TV, you go to a place like Amazon or Best Buy, and you're looking at two or three different TVs. They set up essentially a spreadsheet that shows the TV and then runs through all a standard set of features. And you can look across and see how each of the TVs vary. Well, OPM has a tool that allows you to do that with health plans, that they have the standard features, the standard set of features, and you can compare your plan to another plan to a third and fourth plan, see whether the mix of benefits is better meeting your needs. Again, an important step. when unfortunately I think the overwhelming majority of people fail to take.
Right, and going to that site and comparing plans, I'd imagine it's not hard to compare because they're going to give you an index for you to fill out, put this plan versus that plan. But how is that time consuming to do that? Does it take, you know, half an hour? Does it take 2 hours? Does it take 20 minutes?
Well, it's very easy to use. The OPM tool is, you know, just like, as I said, going to Best Buy or Amazon, they have a list on a page that has a list of all of the plans. You check the plans you want to compare, and then you hit the compare button, and it just creates this matrix for you, and then looking through it. So the actual task of creating the comparison chart, you know, really takes minutes. Now, looking at it, the chart, and making those comparisons and matching the benefits and the differences in the benefits with what your needs are, your projected needs of you and your family, and understanding what those differences are. One recent experience I had is my son is turning 26 the beginning of February. So he's always been on our family plan. Now he works for a private sector employer, but this is the first year now he's had to look at health insurance. And when he was looking at the options that his company offered, I discovered, and I'm sure he's like most other 26-year-olds, he's totally clueless about what all of the terms in health insurance mean. Now, so if you're doing that plan comparison and you don't understand what the difference between a copay and a deductible is, then it's to some extent restricts your ability to do that analysis. One of the things, if I could do a plug for something we did on NITP, we have our monthly webinar series. And in October, I did a webinar, early November, I did a webinar, which was Health Insurance 101, which focused on understanding what those differences are between what the difference between a deductible and a copay is and the different health insurance options. That's really a fundamental thing in being able to make an informed decision is knowing what you're choosing, if the difference between A and B.
Well, that'd be a good show when we teach the seminars for somebody that didn't know, or they were one of the ones that just it was automatic pilot. And when you look at the automatic pilot, that policy might be great at X age, but it might not be so great later on as we age or issues that would parallel somebody's age. And then you want to shop for the one that would cover that. Not all of them are going to cover every malady.
That's right. And absolutely. And my experience over the years is that people focus on the cost, the premiums, that they don't go to that next step and say, well, what does that premium buy me? That every fall when OPM announces the new rates for the upcoming year, you know, the press releases from OPM, the federal press that covers those kinds of things, like, publication office, but the federal press just focuses on there was a 3% increase in premiums, you know, and then they'll give you a few examples. But what do you get for that 3%? Why was there a 3% increase? You know, is there a difference between the plan that had a 10% increase versus the plan that had a 2% increase? Essentially, what is that money buying you? You know, and even within a given family of plans, for example, we had GEHA on the show a couple of weeks ago. You know, GEHA, one of the major plan providers, has five different plans. And the biweekly premium for those plans for self only ranges from $47.32 every 2 weeks to $108.14 every 2 weeks. When someone looks at those plans, they ought to, you know, go beyond those numbers and say, well, what do I get for that extra $60 every 2 weeks in my health insurance plan? And that's the step I don't think a lot of people make. They just say, well, I'll go for the lower price plan. At a point I make in when I'm doing the seminars is that, you know, there's no magic money in the FEHB program. What I mean by that is that a given plan, 100% of their budget has to comes out of the premiums they collect. The premiums, the government's contribution, which is the majority of the premium, as well as the employee's contribution. That's the money that finances the plan. There's no other source of funding. So if a plan has a lower premium, they have a lower amount of money essentially to spend on benefits. Now, and so it's just not the cost of those benefits though. You want to look at how are they saving that money? Are they having different level of physical therapy, for the example I used earlier? Or do they have different co-pays? Do they have a different network? That you want to look beyond just the dollars and cents and see what is that? What's the value to me of the benefit dollar?
Okay, I think Andrew's telling us that it's time for a break, or it's actually 2 minutes after our time for a break. But Andrew's a good guy, so he's going to wait till we stop talking, and then we'll be back and we'll pick it up where we left off. But we need to listen to the first spot. It's WAIPA, the sponsor of the show. The good folks have been sponsoring the show for years, and you can learn more about them right now.
Federal Open Season isn't only about health insurance. Get life insurance for less with WAIPA. WAIPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WAIPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fakely. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. While you're evaluating your benefits this open season, compare the costs of WAIPA and Fakely. See how much you could save on your life insurance by visiting waepa.org. Today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here November 30th, the last show regarding open season. And Ray Kirk, Dr. Ray Kirk, retired federal employee and is good enough to work with us at NITP doing retirement seminars. And he knows, he's forgotten more about these healthcare plans than I think a lot of people know. And Andrew, the ever-efficient engineer, has told me not to click with my pen. I'm nervous, but not nervous. I'm just always have to be doing something. But one of the things I can't do now is click the pen. Anyway, Ray, where did we leave off?
Well, before we pick up, let me just find, you just said that today was November 30th. You've lost a week here, Bob. It's December 7th.
Oh.
But
yeah,
anyway.
I guess I'm looking down at, the last week thing. Sorry about that. How time flies.
Yes, just lost a week there, Bob. Well, we're talking about the value of what you get for your benefit dollar. You know, a couple of issues and that I think people should look at is that how critical the plan network is. And that's something that people sometimes ignore. You know, in making the decision about changing plans, part of that decision might be driven on the question of, is my current doctor or doctors going to be part of the plan network? Now, that's one of the ways that plans manage their cost is the idea of a network is that they negotiate reimbursement rates with either individual doctors or a group of doctors. And that helps the plan overall control costs. Well, if you have a particular doctor and that you've been going to and you change plans and they're not part of the network for the plan you're going to, you know, you have to make a decision of whether changing doctors or maybe having additional costs for having that doctor. You know, and the people sometimes get surprised when they go out of network. They don't realize the gigantic impact that can have on the cost of a given procedure.
So that's part of network would be the plan. The OPM, if you will, not the OPM plan, but the federal employee plan. And let's say that a malady jumps up the week after open season ends. Is there any relief if it was a really serious issue where somebody could change late? I think not, but as you talk, I pretend I'm one of the listeners.
No, because there is no restriction on pre-existing conditions. There's no lifetime maximums. So you're within the benefits that are provided that the plan you have. Now, if somebody, in the example you just gave, that somebody changed plans, let's say during open season, the change for employees doesn't become effective until the first day of the first pay period after January 1st. So that's somewhere in the first few days of the year. So that when an employee and an annuitant changes are effective January 1st because they get paid monthly. So if you had something, a serious illness, suppose you were in an accident, a serious automobile accident on December 20th, you know, your current plan would be paying the expenses and that you incurred for that accident until the effective day of your new plan. And then you would hopefully seamlessly, at least at some point, it will be the seams will all be smoothed out. Your benefits will transfer to the new plan. So you don't get to change plans, but the coverage just moves along with you from one plan to the next. Or the, you know, so as I say, it doesn't matter if you've already been hospitalized on the day the plan is effective. The plan is just going to take over and can start paying you from that point forward, or reimbursing expenses from that point forward.
So as you provide us information that a lot of people, including me, go, really? If you were to look at the seminars you do or the shows that we did, and you would say, I was surprised to know that people don't know X or Y. Is there one that just jumps out at you? Not saying anything bad about anybody, but they don't do their homework.
Well, one of the things I learned over my years at OPM is that since I lost my sense of surprise at how little people know. So sometimes the most fundamental facts, you know, and you run into an employee, you say, how can you not know that? You know, where have you been for the 30 years? Sometimes in the seminars that we do, the pre-retirement seminar where somebody has 30 plus years of service, and I talk about some benefit and I get someone in the class maybe during the break and say, well, thanks for covering that because I didn't have any idea that that was one of the benefits. You know, kind of my reaction is, you know, having worked for decades in the retirement area and the benefits area, is how can an employee not know that? But they don't. So in terms of specifically with the insurance benefits, I think people are surprised. Well, this year, I think people are surprised by the telemedicine benefits. That's been a big shift. That's the you know, the end thing in healthcare services for lots of reasons as a result of the coronavirus. You know, people see that their plan now covers telemedicine, but they may not know exactly what that means. That we've had a couple plans during the series of shows that had different approaches, and people should look beyond the words of that we provide. Telemedicine is covered in full. You know, for some plans, that means you can see your regular doctor or have a conference call with your regular doctor. And if it's a telemedicine visit, then you don't have the copay. Other plans have a separate telemedicine network, meaning you contact the doctors in that network and you get your services there, but it's not your regular physician. So you might not have as much access. They may not have as much access to all your medical records. So, you know, everything but the same name may not be the exact same benefit. So, again, the reason you have to do your homework.
All right. I have a friend that's a doctor, and this person works for a medical group, not an insurance company. But during the pandemic in the early part, we were talking, and I said, what do you do? And he says, well, we do telemed. And I said, How does that work? Or not how does it go? How is it going? And he said, really good. So during the period of time, people couldn't be real mobile, and the doctors in many cases couldn't see all the people that needed to be seen one on one, and so they do telemed. And this person, the doctor, he would call something what it is, whether it's right, wrong, or otherwise. And he was very pleased with the response that the patients had and the ability to talk through. Maybe people get more to the point when they're on the phone than when they come in to the office and, you know, how's the dog, how's the cat, you know, and is your son or daughter still in school, et cetera. So they get off the focus.
I think one of the kind of benefits of the coronavirus has been the kind of the discovery, if you will, of telemedicine. It existed before, but really very few people utilized it. But now, because of all the circumstances, you know, it became the thing, not the thing to do, but it became an option, in some cases, the only option to take it. And I doubt that we'll ever go back to, you know, not utilizing telemedine. People have learned, as you just pointed out, it can be just as efficient and effective, maybe more so. And it certainly is, you know, there's very few downsides to it.
Yeah, I was apprehensive as to wanting to do that. I want to go in, and this was not during the pandemic. But then I realized I didn't have to drive. I didn't have to wait in a waiting room. I didn't have to get the 7:30 a.m. appointment and whatnot. And, if I call and maybe I don't get somebody the first time, I'm going to get them quicker than what I would otherwise. So, now, do you find that most of the plans provide telemed?
Most of them do this year. I'm not sure, you know, if you looked at the plan descriptions from 2020 versus the plan descriptions for the upcoming 2021 plan years, I'm sure you'll see a very big increase in the telemed services that are provided, or whether they just identify that as a specifically separate benefit. Because people have seen the need, it's essentially exploded in coverage, and so the health plans have responded to it. And that's another kind of general consideration about the federal program. You know, you talk about that you sit back not being covered by the FEHB program, and you kind of marvel at how the benefits and what's available. One of the things that OPM does administering it, you know, is that every year they review kind of the experience of the previous year. And then they issue guidance. They'll be doing, I think Jay made reference to this, Jay Fritz a couple of weeks ago made reference to this, that in February or March, OPM will issue guidance to health plans about changes or things to be thinking about in developing their plans for the next year. You know, so it's always a cycle of essentially continuously improving the benefits that are available to employees and reacting to certain needs. You know, at this point, that might be as much as a decade ago. OPM initially encouraged, and I believe now they require, plans to offer smoking cessation benefits. You know, that was a new idea at the time. You know, now that I suspect that the guidance to agencies and for the design of plans in the future is going to require them to have telemedicine, just because it's proven to be an effective way of dealing with not just a problem, but of delivering healthcare services.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was 3 years ago or so when telemed was just starting to gather momentum. And just I thought to myself, gee, people really like to go to the doc. And then the popularity kicked in, and people might like it, but the time spent, but if you're getting the same duty of care, if you will, from your doc, you don't have the commute time, you don't have the wait time, and seems to make sense.
Yeah, as I said, in some ways we've become kind of spoiled that you're used to not having to drive to the doctor, not having to drive to some things where you had to go, and now they all get delivered. It's, as I say, there has been a plus side to the after effects of the coronavirus. Certainly don't want to actually be infected with it, but I think it's made some long-term positive impacts on our society, and the delivery of medicine is going to be one of those.
All right, if we step back and look at telemed now and the cost to go to, if you will, physically versus the cost to do online, I would imagine that gets passed back through to the patient. Not 100%, but I would imagine that there's some recognition of that. But it would seem to me, even if it was the same cost, I would like the efficiency better. I'm getting the same professional service. And if I can do it in less time, it means I have more time to do whatever, whether it's relaxing or working more.
Right. I think in the short term, I think the insurance providers are adjusting the benefits, the reimbursement rates or the co-insurance rates for the telemedicine. But I think the long-term impact is going to be on controlling some of the cost increases in medicine. That if a medical practice can do, just to randomly pick a number, 25% of the services are provided via telemedicine, that's going to reduce some of their overall cost structure. So in the long run, that's going to hold down some of the cost increases in healthcare, and that then translates into providing a lower cost insurance, or maybe the insurance carrier is able to provide benefits in some other area, increase the other benefits because they're now reduced their cost for office visits.
All righty. Andrew, you think we could we take the break early here? It's so that you can listen to what NITP can do for the listeners. And then we'll come back and we'll still have a focus of open season, but we'll talk about insights from Ray about dealing with OPM.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today, December 7th, 2020. And co-host Ray Kirk, Dr. Ray Kirk, federal benefits specialist, long storied career at OPM. And fortunately, we work together doing retirement seminars and, of course, the radio show. And large focus on healthcare issues, plans, prior to the break, and we could go back if need be. But here's the last 20 minutes, and I like the title of it, Insights from Ray About Dealing with OPM. So the first bullet point under that, Ray, retirement application tips.
Okay, let me start with an application tip that has to do with, goes back to open season. It's how does someone deal with the situation that they're going to retire on December 31st of this year, and they want to make a change during open season? As I mentioned, the changes aren't going to be effective until after they've retired. So what's the process, and can you do that? And first of all, there's no need to panic. There is a system in place. But one of the key things for someone to remember who's retiring December 31st, they want to make an open season change, is do not use any of the agency's online systems. Agencies really encourage you to do that, but this is an exception to that. You want to complete the paper form as part of the retirement, and include that as part of your retirement application. And then your HR people will put a big cover sheet on your retirement application to flag that to OPM. And when your case file gets to OPM, they will immediately process your health insurance change, so that even before they do any other action on your retirement application, so that you get covered by your new health insurance plan as soon as possible. Usually that would be then shortly after the first of the year, so not long after it would have been. So you wind up with seamless coverage. And that's another concern people raise in the seminars is, when I retire, is there going to be a gap while OPM is processing my retirement application where I'm not going to have health insurance coverage? And there is no gap, that you are seamlessly covered from the time you actually, your last day of work, until OPM finalizes your retirement case, even if that takes a month or two or even longer. The healthcare coverage does continue, so you don't have to worry about that.
The healthcare coverage would also start, let's say a new employee joins the federal sector. Does it start the day they start? So you got the job offer a month in advance of the start date. So it would be the start date that would have application to the health insurance.
That's correct.
Now, I would think.
You have to actually be a federal employee.
Okay, I would think, but I had to ask. I think like that, unfortunately. So,
another retirement, that kind of more broadly speaking, a retirement tip, and is to read the retirement application carefully. You know, that sounds like, but of course, but the reality is that OPM every month they publish these statistics. About 20% of the applications they get have some kind of defect in them. You know, sometimes it's missing records, but sometimes it's just flat out errors on the application. So looking at errors on the application is the application package. If somebody looks at it, first of all, the number one rule, actually read the words on the application. That includes the instructions. As I say, that sounds like, of course I will, but we know that people don't do that. And then also as part of the application, there are two checklists. One is a checklist for the HR people. Another is a checklist for the retiree. And it essentially says, example of someone who had military service. You know, if you had military service, is there a copy of your DD-214, which is the documentation certifying and verifying the period of military service? You know, is that included? Because that's a required document for anyone who had military service. You know, then read the checklist and see if your application actually includes all those elements. That often, having looked at retirement applications, it's clear someone just went down the chart, you know, checked all the yeses, you know, without actually reading the details of it. Because you see someone checks, yes, DD-214 is attached. There's no DD-214 in the package. You know, so it's, sounds silly, but mistakes get made.
In your career, looking at the applications or talking about them, is there a common thread that people miss? I'm not saying everybody misses, but of the people that miss something, is the greater percentage something that they failed to list a job 25 years ago? Did they fail to list something else that you would think they otherwise would have caught?
I think the biggest mistakes and two of the high frequency errors that are failure to really pay close attention again to the words on the form. That one example is the election of spousal survivor benefits. That the retirees have three choices. One is the maximum survivor benefit. The second is a partial survivor benefit. And the third option is no survivor benefit. And the form, and there's a box there for each of those options. And the box says right on top of it, initials. And OPM gets a significant number of applications where there are check marks, asterisks, all kinds of other little symbols in there that are not initials. Now you do that, OPM is going to send you, you know, you kind of put your application processing on hold. OPM is going to send you a new form, that portion of the retirement application, and ask you this time actually make your choice by putting initials there. Right? And that's, again, if you actually looked at the form, it's when OPM says initials, they literally need initials. Another common error, and the single biggest source of errors, has to do with the form within the retirement application that deals with what you want to happen, your life insurance, your FEGLI, Federal Employees Group Life Insurance, when you turn 65. One of the retirement provisions, which is kind of a little strange, is that when you retire, no matter what your age is when you retire, you make elections about what you want to happen to your life insurance when you turn 65. So somebody retires at 57 years old. That form sits in OPM for 8 years before they do anything with it effectively. And then when you're 65, OPM implements those choices. Well, the form, for whatever reason, follows kind of OPM's sense of what the logical world would look like, which unfortunately in this case doesn't seem to be in sync with what many other people think a logical world would be. Because for all of the life insurance elections or options you have, there are three choices. Is one, yes, I want this to happen. No, I want to terminate the life, this category of life insurance. And the third one is, no, I don't have that option. You know, many people apparently think that if they never had a certain life insurance option, there's no need to put down an election of what they want to happen at age 65 because it never existed. But that's not the way OPM sees the world. So everybody has to actually fill in that portion of the life insurance application, say, no, I don't have this coverage. They say that's the single biggest source of errors. And again, that would be resolved if somebody carefully read every word on a retirement application.
What if they elected something that just doesn't make sense to the reviewer, or it pops up a year or two later? Is there any way somebody could say, you know, 1,000 pardons, but this is what I thought it meant, and that's why?
There is a process to have OPM review decisions, review what's going on. And something I always emphasize, I emphasized while I was at OPM, is that you are always your own best advocate. And there are sometimes when you're your only advocate. So there is a procedure. And actually, let me mention, going back to health insurance, and then we'll talk about the OPM procedure, that if you're unhappy with a decision your health insurance company has made, so maybe they denied coverage for some service, or the reimbursement, the amount that they've paid is not what you expected, there is a process, and it's outlined on EOB, Explanation of Benefits, the little form that you get every time the insurance company is paying a bill or a portion of a bill. And if you're unhappy with the insurance company's decision, you get a chance to formally request that they re-examine that decision. And then as part of that re-examination, they can provide you, or as you're preparing your response to them, your request, they provide you all the details of what went into their making their decision. So you have that a second shot at the insurance company. If you're unhappy with the second decision by the insurance company, you can then request OPM to make a review of the whole decision about that insurance claim. And again, if you're unhappy with that, you can go to the federal courts. So,
all right. In your outline, you mentioned here, there are three things that one of these three, somebody might not think needed attention. And one of them, you've talked about the importance of this, keep OPM abreast of what's going on with you, the thrift board, and Social Security. So I'd imagine each one of those three really want to know your addresses, and maybe more important, the bank changes.
Right, absolutely, and particularly for people covered by FERS, where there are three components to the retirement, FERS retirement system, having the annuity from OPM, having Social Security benefits, and having being covered by TSP, and at some point starting to get your money out of TSP. And those three agencies, just as the benefits are independent, those agencies are independent, and that means they don't share any information. That if you notify OPM that you've changed mailing addresses and now you have a new financial institution you want your monthly benefits sent to, that doesn't provide any information to Social Security. It doesn't provide any information to the thrift board. You have to independently notify each one of those. So it requires you to maintain a lifelong business relationship with those three agencies. No sharing of information. It's three separate notifications you have to make.
In dealing with Social Security a number of years ago, they're extremely efficient, and got whatever I needed to be done over the phone. And I was, of course, me being an accountant goes, okay, I did this, but how can I know that it was acted upon? And it was pretty easy because whatever I was doing, I was getting the next month or two after that. So I knew whatever we talked about took hold. But other people might not think like that. I would hope a lot of people don't think like me, but
Well,
Go ahead.
You're getting confirmations from OPM and Social Security and the Thrift Board on changes that OPM is very much into the mail. TSP is very much into mailing you notices. Social Security pretty much does that too. So even though you might do something online, or as you mentioned, you might be talking to them on the phone, that you're going to receive some kind of confirmation about the change. That if it's a change that affects your OPM annuity, every time something changes the amount that you're paid in your annuity, that the monthly benefit is going to change, OPM is going to send you a written annuity statement, which is a essentially like while someone's still employed, their leave and earnings statement. It's going to detail all of the total annuity you're eligible for that month and all of the deductions and what change was made in those deductions. If you make its change to TSP, they're going to send you a written confirmation that now your monthly withdrawals, you've changed from $1,000 a month to $1,200 a month. You know, as well as it's showing that change showing up in the amount deposited in your bank account, you're going to get that written confirmation. Social Security follows a similar procedure. They always verify. Those agencies are still into mailing those confirmation out, which you got kind of as a total sidebar. But an important element is we have all these scams where people get phone calls allegedly from Social Security that a question about your benefits. You know, there have been in the past instances where people have received phone calls with someone claiming they're from OPM. I'm sure that some scammer has hit upon a similar thing with the Thrift Board. None of those agencies are going to call you up and say there's a problem with your benefits. If there's a problem with your benefits, they will send you a letter. You know, so just everybody be aware that phone call that says call me back or your benefits will go to zero next month, that's not going to happen. That you will get a letter, and the letter will lay out what the issue is and tell you how you can address it.
It reminds me of something years ago. I had a client whose spouse passed, and they wanted to change something with regards to automatic withdrawals from the checking account as well as Social Security or whatnot. And she was unnerved by the individual, and the individual was going to come to the house. And I said, "Do you have the name?" And I won't give the name because it was a made-up name, but nonetheless, I'm not going to use the name. But I called back up and I said, "Well, this is terrific. I understand 11:30 on Thursday morning, we're going to have a meeting at da-da-da-da's house." And I said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, that's good because the FBI is coming, the local police is coming." And I won't tell you what he said, but we didn't have the meeting. But she would have otherwise probably let this person in. She was a pretty sharp lady, and I was happy it was done with a phone call. Anyway, so this gets back to maybe bad advice by somebody with regards to their federal benefits, or I don't know. Would somebody be able to change some distribution of their annuity check to other than state, local governments and health insurance? I would imagine they would have like a legal judgment would have to come out.
Right. If somebody to get a judgment against an annuity, that OPM has to receive the legal notice, and then there's a way of processing that. And again, like everything else OPM does, before they made a change to you, they would send a decision letter saying that we've received the judgment, the details of the judgment, and we're changing your annuity is going to be reduced by $200 a month. And then you have the option, just like every other decision by OPM, to ask OPM to review that decision. And then if you don't like OPM's review, you can go to the Merit Systems Protection Board. So things just don't happen in a vacuum, that there's a process, you know, it's a bureaucracy. And that kind of, I guess, cuts both ways. The good way in this circumstance is OPM is just not going to take actions kind of in the absence of following their very strict and sometimes cumbersome, but always detailed procedures.
I remember, again, I'm not geezing here, but it was interesting to me. It was a couple, and there was a divorce, and There's some book at OPM, I believe, that was written by somebody, and it's almost like a cookbook with regards to divorce, and supposedly it's like a bulletproof.
Guide to court orders.
Yeah.
That the attorney at OPM that wrote that was a coworker of mine at the time, and his approach was that to create a set of language, a standardized language. And so the guide for attorneys says, if you want to do X, then use this language. And it goes through all the kinds of provisions that are typically in a court order and gives an attorney, as you say, a cookbook to pull the specific language to, and in fact, that's been codified as part of the regulations, OPM's regulations on court orders. Now, if you want to achieve this goal, then this is the language to use. And if you use that language, then absolutely that's what OPM's going to do.
Yeah, I was also surprised. I was working with an attorney, well-known attorney in the divorce sector. And I said, this is pretty good. And he says, this is about as good as it comes from the private side.
Right. And one of the things kind of to build off that is that people should be aware that the federal rules applying to how divorces are handled in OPM deals with judgments and part of a divorce case are not always exactly the same as they are in the private sector. That OPM has a different set of rules, and those are the rules that are in this guidebook. So you need to make sure that the language in the guidebook is used and not what might be used in a private sector divorce.
Okay, Andrew is telling us he's got a rule book. He's going to cut us off unless we get off. So final thoughts, quick thoughts.
Again, back to open season. You have a week left that if you haven't done anything, take some time and look at the options and see if there's a better option for you.
All righty. Thank you, Ray. I was taking good notes, and we'll talk next week.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.